Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you do have any comments that you would like to make during this broadcast, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my very special guest for tonight, I just want to make a fast announcement that plans are firming up for our April Healing Weekend, which will be the weekend of April 23rd and 24th in Dulles, Virginia. And I'm really excited about how things are moving along. We have a wonderful weekend planned. This is your time for healing, for making connections with other women who understand your pain without saying a word. And without doubt, women who attend these healing weekends walk away with a totally different feeling than when they came. You will never feel alone again, and you will have a new sister camaraderie that you never imagined. So if you are interested, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you the details. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce my very special guest for tonight, and his name is Dr. George Simon. And I'd like to say that there was a woman who's part of our network who wrote to me several months ago, and she wrote to me about Dr. Simon's book, In Sheep's Clothing, Understanding and Dealing with Manipulative People. This straight sister of ours had read some articles that he had written, and she was so impressed with what he had to say. And she asked if there was any way he could join our show tonight, that she knew that it would really benefit many of our women who listen to this show. So without further ado, thank you so much, Dr. Simon, for joining our show tonight.
Thank you for having me on, Bonnie. I appreciate it.
nice to know you already had a fan base before you even came on the show, right? It's very rare that people are so impressed with you. Like this woman, she said, this man has changed my life. So I'm so excited that you came here.
I'm always so edified to get comments like that. And frankly, it's word of mouth like that and the goodwill of so many that have made In Sheep's Clothing a 20-year international bestseller.
Which is wonderful, and several of our women today, I just announced it, so they've just bought the book, and they're really excited about reading it. So let's just talk about you for a little bit. You are a psychologist, and you've worked in this field of working with manipulating people for a long time, correct?
Yes, for about 25 years, I have specialized in dealing with all sorts of what I call disturbed characters, including manipulators, and I also have worked with their victims. And that's what I've specialized in for the past 25 years. And it's been actually very rewarding work.
Do you think there's a prototype? Because I really do believe that women who are vulnerable are really prototypes for men who are what I like to call predators or people who are narcissists who need to feed off of others. Do you agree with that?
Well, there is one characteristic that all of the character disturbed folks that I describe in my books and online articles, I believe that there is a spectrum to character disturbance, much like we've learned about the autistic disorders and several other disorders. Before, we used to think that there were nice, tight little categories for various personality types. What we're now realizing is more conditions exist along a spectrum of both quality and severity. And within the spectrum of character disturbance, there are many nefarious characters. And one thing they really like in their targets of manipulation is all the things we consider good, you know, conscientiousness, goodwill, empathy, all of these qualities that make a person pretty decent. Well, these are the kinds of qualities that, unfortunately, character-impaired people prey upon.
And unfortunately, I think that people who are the good, kind, nurturing people, I think that we have somewhat of a pattern. I include myself because, you know, that's my misfortune as well, even though, you know, I finally have found a healthy relationship, but for so many years didn't. Is the fact that when we see someone who's broken, we think we can fix him with the right amount of love and care. And I've certainly learned that's not the case. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, one of the things that we know is that psychology, as it was framed for the most part, say 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, didn't help with that whole issue. Because they had us seeing everyone, the dominant paradigm of the time had us seeing everyone as dealing with fears and insecurities and hang-ups, basically, that were unconscious, and they were dealing with trauma and wounds from childhood that were making them so neurotic in the first place, and so therefore, with enough love and understanding and, as Carl Rogers used to say, unconditional positive regard, they would heal. Well, this is a nice notion, but it's misguided. That it's especially inappropriate for the phenomenon of our age, which is character disturbance. In my book, Character Disturbance, I say that back in Freud's time, if there were a motto or a slogan that would define the horribly repressive Victorian era that he was in, the slogan would be, "Don't even think about it." And people were truly very hung up, very unduly anxious, and worked up over even thinking about acting on some of their baser instincts, and they were frankly nervous wrecks, making themselves sick with worry. And so he developed all these theories about how to make such people well and to cure their disturbing symptoms. Well, if there were a slogan or a motto that would best capture the zeitgeist or the cultural milieu of our time, it would be just like the Nike commercial used to say, just do it. So instead of having people who are by and large overly hung up and sick with worry, we have far more people today who aren't hung up enough and who aren't concerned enough about the things they let themselves do. It's a whole new age with a whole new set of problems, and unfortunately, the traditional psychology paradigms were not up to the task of dealing with it. Not only that, they were harmful. They promoted some ideas in the public mindset that really put people at a disadvantage.
It's interesting because when I was reading your information about this and I thought, boy, this is so on target, do you see a point in time, you know, in the last, I don't know, would you say 20 years, 25, 30 years, when was the turning point where people, where the rules stopped applying, you know, and things changed?
It began in the 60s, and it began for the same reason that affects every dysfunctional family. You know, in a dysfunctional family system, what happens is the inmates take over the asylum because the people in power are either neglectful or they're abusive or they're out to lunch. That's the way it is in any dysfunctional family. And so, therefore, somebody has to step up to the plate, and usually that's the higher functioning member of the dysfunctional family, which is the child. And they try to take on the parent role, but they're not ready for it. Well, the same thing happened to us in the 60s culturally. The people in power were abusing it. Under false pretenses, they were sending people off to their deaths in a war that was ill-conceived. And there were other abuses of power as well. And you know what? The inmates decided that we would take over and we would rewrite the rules. And we did. We rewrote the sexual norms. We rewrote the behavioral norms. And we thought we did a really good job. And only now, when we look back, do we realize that we didn't just do such a hot job after all.
Turned around so much during that time. In fact, I always say I was so amazed, you know, growing up during those times, and I was breaking all those rules too, sad to say, and helping to change them. But I really was very surprised this country ever recovered from that split. I never saw a country so divided like during, you know, the whole Vietnam War situation where everybody was just standing up and saying, no more, we're going to fight for ourselves. It was a very, you know, between old and young, a very big divide. And I just never thought the country would ever heal.
That's exactly what happens when the people in power abuse it.
But now I think things went so much the other way where we've become so enabling and so permissive in our society that the rules have just, there are no rules. The rules are
distorted. This is the age of relativism. This is the age of relativism, permissiveness, and most especially and most unfortunately, entitlement. Perhaps there is no greater threat to our culture and to the character development of our young people than that sense of entitlement.
Exactly. And I do agree with you there so much, Dr. Simon. I was wondering if you would answer, in your opinion, this question of nature over nurture. When it comes to character disorder, is this something that you believe is inborn, or is it something that's developed, or both?
I'm so glad you asked that question. In both in sheep's clothing and in character disturbance, which is the more in-depth study of how personality and character is shaped, I really go into this a lot, and I was fortunate enough to be a student of a professor who was a disciple of the most preeminent personality theorist of our time, Theodore Milan. And I really got into this multidimensional framework of personality development. We know that biology plays a role. That includes genetics, that includes uh-huh. hormonal contributions, it includes constitutional variables, and even just the neurological wiring. We know that biology plays a role. We also know that environment plays a role. But the key realization that Milan had, that I have seen so many times since I became aware of this paradigm and started to use it in my practice, the key is that there is a dynamic interaction between environment and biology, and it's not static. It's a dynamic interaction that continues all throughout early development. For example, you have a family, say, where there is harsh discipline bordering on abuse. You have one child who is predisposed perhaps to be more fearful and retreating. Another child who is predisposed to be more hot-tempered and maybe even assertive. The dynamics are going to be very different for those two children. And even though the same conditions may exist, they're going to turn out very differently because there's a dynamic interaction between their biological predispositions and what's going on in the environment. That's the key.
So in other words, if they're predisposed to, you know, certain behaviors by living in a situation that would just add to that, more of it would come out because they're already predisposed.
That's correct. And so what happens is that over time, each individual develops what we call a style or a preferred way of dealing with life, of approaching the world, of seeing the world, of seeing other people, of dealing with other people. And this style, once it's pretty well set, is relatively unchanging throughout adult life, except with very specialized intervention. And that's the thing that's been so lacking. How I got the reputation that I have has been because I was on the forefront of folks who were trying some new paradigms, because so many folks were going to get help, and they weren't getting any help. Either they weren't getting help for the person in their life who had a character disturbance, or they had some character issues of their own, and they weren't getting any help. The therapist wanted to deal with their fears or their insecurities, have them deal with their feelings, all those traditional things that we thought would help. And they don't help when it comes to character disturbance. They're not appropriate. They don't help.
Do you need more like a behavioral, you know, like more of a behavioral strategy as far as helping character disturbances?
I outline that very specifically in both of my books, and I even give illustrative vignettes that show what the kind of therapy looks like. And I also do a point-by-point comparison between what therapy looks like, what traditional talk, insight-oriented therapy looks like for your average, what I call neurotic individual, and what specialized cognitive behavioral therapy looks like for a person with a character disturbance. It's very, very different, point by point.
As I've spoken to you earlier about women in our situation, many of us have husbands or ex-husbands who have severe character disorders, either because of the fact that they've been living a very compartmentalized life, or they've been living on a daily lie, and to the point where they start believing those lies and having their own points of view about life that are totally off the record of, you know, off the wall of what they should be. So when you have to deal with people who are dealing on a totally different realm of reality, are there any good strategies that you can suggest?
Wow. Yeah. One of the things that I tried to do in both of my books is give people a framework to operate from, a framework whereby which they can understand what's really going on with the person that they're dealing with. Because we tend to make so many assumptions based on traditional psychology paradigms, we make assumptions like, well, there must be a wound here, or perhaps there's an insecurity at work here, and if only the person was aware of it, then we could deal with it, or with enough, as you mentioned before, love and nurturance, that would get better. What I do is I set out a framework for what's really going on so that people can really understand it, and then I lay out a framework for how do you deal with it. What are the tactics that somebody's going to use to play you? How do you recognize those tactics? What do you do in response to those tactics? How do you challenge and confront distorted thinking that leads to distorted behavior? Those kinds of things. Practical
advice.
Do you
teach people how to set boundaries, Dr. Simon?
Well, absolutely. And
I think that's one of our greatest challenges, that most of us do not understand setting boundaries, because many of us are beaten down by the time it's time to set them.
Yeah, and we also have to stop making excuses. One of the things the old psychology had us doing is finding some underlying reason for every behavior. And if we only understood that underlying reason, then things would be better. Well, when it comes to certain kinds of behaviors, the reason is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be willing to set boundaries and enforce limits. And basically, as I say in my books, set the terms of engagement. In other words, set the rules for how a healthy interaction is going to go with you. You have the right and the responsibility to do that, to take care of yourself.
I was just wondering how you feel on this particular issue. I'm a very big advocate in divorce where a family is broken, because I feel that it has a tremendous effect on the children to grow up in a broken home where there's like a lot of abuse going on, a lot of bad behavior going on. And
yeah,
a lot of women feel that they had to stay because of the children. And I kind of take the position, like Dr. Phil always says, it's better to come from a broken home than live in a broken home. And
mm-hmm.
I know that I came from a broken home. It didn't break soon enough, but I grew up at a different, you know, period than my younger sisters did, and they were far more adjusted, even though they were in a single-family home, because they weren't living
yes.
with the constant abuse and yelling and screaming and the accusations. How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. I believe that behavior is the issue. And when behavior is inappropriate, when it's abusive, when it's neglectful, there should be absolutely no tolerance. There should be absolutely no tolerance. These environments
right.
that are created by character-distorted people, they inflict harm. Nobody has
mm-hmm.
the right to inflict the harm, and nobody has the responsibility to subject themselves to the harm. We have a very misguided notion about all of that. And, you know, therapists are guilty of that, too. I've seen this happen. I've had many a person write me. I get about maybe 20 or 30 emails a month from people who have suffered what I call therapy-induced trauma. And that is where they went into the therapist's office for a joint counseling session with their character-disturbed partner. And
mm-hmm.
their character-disturbed partner did all the shenanigans that they usually
mm-hmm.
do at home right in front
exactly.
of the therapist. Without confrontation. And when the aggrieved party dared to call it out, something like, you know, see, this is what they do,
mm-hmm.
then the therapist gets into the position of enabling by seeking to understand what's underneath
right.
it when it doesn't matter. And so I call this therapy-induced trauma. When behavior is inappropriate, it should not be tolerated, period. It doesn't matter what the reason is.
I agree with you so much, because so many of our women go to therapists and get very poor advice, and they're doing exactly what you're saying. They're going in with someone who has tremendous problems and character disorders, and many times they even turn the tables on, you know, the wife, who's really the innocent party here. And the therapist is just not picking up on that. You know, you would think that a therapist would have that kind of insight, which is why we always teach women, before you go to a therapist, make sure it's someone who understands the situation, who understands manipulation, who understands you're living with someone who's living a lie to start with, and who can confront that person on it and not blame you.
Yes.
You know, to add to the injury, the therapist blaming our people, well, you're not trying hard enough, you had to make some changes. You know, these are situations where the marriages are not going to work, period, and the best thing a therapist could do is teach people how to disengage from these marriages under the best of circumstances so that, you know, if there are children, they're not going to be harmed, but not to keep people in a situation that can't be fixed. I just don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, you know, character disturbance, like I said, exists along a spectrum of both quality and severity. So there are some character impaired people who are not so far along the spectrum that they can't be helped. They can, but only with the kind of therapy that many clinicians are not trained to do. And that kind of therapy confronts behavior at the moment it occurs. And reliably, every time it occurs. And it also confronts the kind of thinking and the kind of attitudes that predispose that behavior. So I'll give you an example. Sometimes I do collateral consultations with other therapists who are dealing with couples. I do these via Skype. And I'll give you an example. A couple will be in the therapist's office, and one party or the other will be talking about the spouse and using sarcastic language and mocking using not only a mocking tone but trying to mimic the other person's sound or do an impression basically of the person in a mocking way, and you know, it may seem like a little thing, and the therapist might want to let it slide and get to the quote-unquote feelings underneath it all, but I'm not going to let that slide. I'm going to confront that right at the time it occurs. And like my book advises, just like a train without brakes that is at the top of a mountainside and is beginning to descend, you don't try to apply brakes, you don't try to stop the train when the brakes are defective anyway, once it's already halfway down that mountainside. It's already built up way too much momentum, and it's going to crash. It's going to hit something, and it's going to be bad. So when these chains of behavior just get started, I'm in there instantly confronting and correcting. And addressing the attitudes that predispose that kind of thing. For example, the attitudes of entitlement that would suggest that somebody has the right to be that demeaning to their spouse, especially in a therapist's office, for goodness sake, where they're supposed to be getting help. Now, here's the trick. I'm going to confront that. I'm not going to leave a single thing unconfronted, but when I do it, I have to do it without any malice and without any negative energy. What I have to do is make the behavior itself so self-evidently incorrect and harmful that there's no escape for the person who's displayed it. And then,
now, you can do that as a therapist, but let's say, can women learn to do this on their own? Because you can't always be in the office of a therapist.
Yeah. Well, you just asked me basically why I wrote my books and why I have my blog at manipulative-people.com. This is exactly it. You know, the hundreds of articles that I've written and the books, and I've got two new books coming out, by the way, too, in the next few months. But that's the reason I wrote them. I wanted to give people a practical way, an easy-to-understand way, to not just understand the problem, but also use the tools to confront it head-on, directly, and empower themselves. That's exactly why I wrote the books.
So let's talk a little bit about the difference in the two books, because, of course, you know, I was so excited to see the book in sheep's clothing, but then when I saw character disturbances, so what is one like more of an introductory and the second one more of a follow-up or two totally unrelated?
Well, In Sheep's Clothing is basically a look at the most manipulative personality types and the kind of grief they can cause you in your life and how to deal with them. And in Sheep's Clothing, I do set an initial framework for where the most manipulative types fit along the vast spectrum of character disturbance. But almost as soon as I'd finished the book, I realized, you know, there's a whole rest of the spectrum out there. There are all kinds of impaired characters, from borderlines to narcissists to antisocials to psychopaths. There's a whole range of these folks that I haven't yet talked about and how to deal with. And so that's why I wrote Character Disturbance. It's a more in-depth of all the disturbed character types, and it puts it within a framework that the average person can really understand.
Right, and does it give you strategies on how to set these boundaries and how to stand up to people who are trying to beat you down? Like I always tell my women, like with my ex-husband, he was very much of a rageaholic as far as yelling. And I always said his strategy was to, you know, shout me down, to shut me up. And when you have people who are like that, you know, it's really difficult sometimes for women to stand up for themselves. So do you have some good strategies on there on how to work around that?
Yes, I do. And, you know, you mentioned something really important there. Rage as a tactic is one of the things that I talk about in both of my books. You know, we have all of these well-intended programs called anger management programs. And they're all based on the supposition that anger is always the precipitant of aggressive behavior, whether it be verbally aggressive behavior or other kinds of aggressive behavior. And the fact is that with the more predatory types, the display of rage is more tactical, and it's frankly not even rooted really in anger. Some of these folks just know that browbeating is a successful tool to beat you into submission.
Exactly.
So when they want something, and that's the motivation. Instead of anger being the motivation, as I point out in my books, desire is the motivation. When they want something, and they know that you will eventually wither under the onslaught, they bring out the guns. Not because they're angry, but because you will eventually cave.
I think that is such a good point, because I think you're right. A lot of times it's not based on particularly rage, but just control.
Yes.
And it's a form of using control.
That's the name of the game.
So I just want to tell our women, because I know that Dr. Simon's kind enough to come on the show tonight, and he will be back again, he promised me, in the spring when, you know, he has a little more time. But I just want to let women know, if you go to his website at drgeorgesimon.com, drgeorgesimon.com, as we can see it on the Blog Talk Radio as we're talking now, and you go there and you can see about his book In Sheep's Clothing, write about all the wonderful reviews, and you can order it through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, all the major retailers. Borders still around, maybe not, and the major retailers online. And then, you know, there's a lot here about his other books, Character Disturbance. And also you have some other writings here, including your blog. And you have your blog archive.
My blog at manipulative-people.com, that's www.manipulative-people.com, that blog has turned into one of the most active blogs in the country, within the top 20. And it's all because people have found a resource there to deal with the phenomenon of our age. I post one new article every single week, so there's lots of fresh content. And there's articles about just about every topic that you can imagine Yeah.
Right. In fact, I'm on there now.
It.
And one of the great, you know, I'm just looking at some of the headlines here, which is really important for our women, and I am going to post this and put it in the next newsletter, that, for instance, personality and character disorder are common misconceptions. But then you also have one here, toxic relationship recovery, comfort and lessons learned. And I think that's so important about recovery, because a lot of women just go through such a difficult time recovering from these relationships.
Right.
So you have a lot of information here on some of the tactics on doing that, correct?
Yes. You know, that's one of the things that I unfortunately had to learn from so many of the victims of these toxic relationships, is that there's a process that folks go through very typically that's quite an ordeal, because after you've been in a relationship with somebody who's truly toxic, who has a severe character disturbance, maybe even has psychopathic tendencies, you begin to question yourself. You begin to question your sanity. You lose all sense of trust. You lose your bearings. You start to question what's real and what isn't. And it can be a very long recovery. And there are very few resources for women who have been through this. Very few therapists really understand the nature of that trauma, and what it takes to help heal. And so one of the things that's made the blog so popular is that all these ex-victims have come together to support one another. My commentators are actually my best writers. they provide far more helpful advice, I think, than even my articles do, because they'll find something that they resonate with, and then they'll provide examples, and then if I'm fortunate enough, they will be able to say how they used one of the tools or one of the principles that I advanced in one of the articles or in the books to really empower themselves in life, and they'll coach other readers through that whole process. So I'm very heartened. I'm very fortunate. I have a lot of support, and it's all at the grassroots level, and I couldn't be happier about that.
One of the articles that you have on your blog, which, you know, is something that we talk about a lot amongst, you know, ourselves, is called the Blame Game. And it says, today's post concludes the current series on blaming as in manipulation and responsibility avoidance tactic. And, you know, I think this is such a very strong piece of, you know, the lives that we live, getting blamed rather than having to accept responsibility for what the real problem is. It's much easier for our husbands or ex-husbands to say that we're at fault. And many of our women really suffer with this, because I can't begin to tell you the thousands of dollars some women spend on trying to change what they look like. They have all kinds of plastic surgery, breast implants, breast reductions, gastric bypasses, life-threatening kinds of surgeries to try to make their husbands want them more, while their husbands are sitting and blaming them. Well, I wouldn't want to touch anybody who looks like you, rather than just be honest about it. And this really takes a toll on their self-esteem, their sexual esteem. And just trying to recover from this, you know, you become so raw after years of being peeled down. You know, it's just not like a once-in-a-while thing. This is on a daily basis. So I think it's really great to have this kind of resource.
I'm glad you mentioned that one thing, because, you know, on the surface, Bonnie, on the surface there is actually some truth to that complaint and that blame game that some of these men who have sexual orientation issues that they have not honestly dealt with and resolved, there is some truth to what they say. What they're saying in essence, to translate what they're really trying to convey in their lying and in their blaming, is that because of their conflicted orientation, they require what we call a super stimulus in order to get excited. In other words, they require the archetypal feminine beauty to get them sufficiently excited that they can complete the sexual act. So there's a certain amount of truth to that. But that's not the woman's fault. It's not,
yeah,
it's
some
not
of these
the
women are Barbie
fault.
Dolls, and it doesn't make any
that,
difference.
Yeah, that's right. It's not her fault that she's not going to be a Barbie doll. And even if there was
if
a point
a Barbie
in her
doll,
life,
it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
He wants Ken. He doesn't want Barbie. He wants Ken, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I say, but women don't understand that. They, you know, when they keep getting blamed for having something wrong with them. And I just think it's the worst thing that a man can do when he says to his wife, well, I don't want to touch you because you smell. You know, how does that take its toll on your psyche and then having to be self-conscious of something that doesn't even exist and scrubbing yourself every day and thinking there's something wrong with you? You know, it's just very painful for so many of the women who have to go through this.
Yes.
So I think that having this available as a resource, having your books available, which, you know, we'll keep promoting, and hopefully people buy both of them and read your blogs and contribute to it, would be wonderful. And I can't thank you enough. I know that you took time out of your extremely busy schedule, and that's why we're going to be cutting this shorter than usual, because Dr. Simon does have other obligations. But you did say you would come back in the spring when it's a little less hectic, right?
Yes, I will. I'd be glad to. And I really appreciate you having me on, and I hope to speak with you again soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Simon, and we'll talk a little more about you after you hang up. I'll go through it with the women again. So thank you so much, and you have a wonderful holiday season, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, Bonnie. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, ladies and men who may be listening, that was a really exciting conversation with Dr. Simon. And I think that his books are a tremendous value to us. And also his blog. It's really interesting if you go to his blog. And I'm here at manipulative-people.com. And there you can find on here his books. You can find his blog. And all of us need as much information as we can in order to cope with these situations. I know that in many of our cases, we're having trouble during the marriage, after the marriage, when there are children who are involved as far as getting boundaries that are set up. We just don't know how to deal with them, and especially if you're dealing with someone who has any one of these character disorders. So, once again, the names of the books are In Sheep's Clothing, Understanding and Dealing with Manipulative People, and the other one is Character Disturbance. I know that I'm going to be ordering these books tonight, after I hang up from the show. So I wanted to thank everyone who listens, and we have some good shows coming up in the future. I had just sent out our new newsletter, and there's a petition in there for Joyce Short about sexual problems that come up in holding men accountable in New Jersey. It's pretty much on its way to becoming a law. And I know that will affect many of our women also, and Joyce will be a guest on our show next month. We have Tara coming back from our book, Is He Straight? We're looking for Mr. Straight. She'll be back in a couple of weeks. And I always try to bring you interesting programming that will help you move ahead in this process. I just want to end by saying, you know, this is the beginning of the holiday season, and I know it's a very, very painful time for many women, especially if you're just in the midst of going through your first year of getting out of your marriage or learning about your marriage, and you feel so isolated and alone while you see other couples for all these holidays, starting with Thanksgiving and then with Christmas, New Year's, Valentine's Day. And I just want to tell you, you're not alone. If you need support during this time, just write to me at bonk@aol.com. I have lots of support that's available if you ask for it. If you're not on my newsletter list, write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to put you on the mailing list. And also, buy a book. Buy one of my books. You know, you can find them at my website at gayhusbands.com. You can read stories from other women who have contributed. This month I was featuring Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Part 2. There are some wonderful, wonderful stories in there from women who have gone through the experiences that you're feeling. And so you can feel that you're in touch with others who know exactly how you're feeling. And that's the great thing with these books. They're stories and compilations of stories from other women. And it will really touch your heart and make you feel connected. So we're going to be ending our show a little bit earlier tonight, and I hope that you have a wonderful week. And keep in mind Dr. George Simon and his books. You can read about them in the newsletter, or you can go to his website at drgeorgesimon.com, or go to the blog at manipulative-people.com. All right, everybody, that's the show for tonight, and I'll be back here with you again next week, and I'll be ending the program with a song. And we'll be playing the Beatles' Blackbird. That's a very inspirational song.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the line of a dark black night. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.